Domenico Muratore is at work.
Outside, it's pretty much as you imagine it would be. It's raining. I can hear songs or arguments.
I'm not sure which, through the wall. But it's all muffled.
As I listen to the wall, the rain outside,
I can only invent the particulars. I attach names, dates, places,
strategies, and histories to these muffled songs or arguments. Or the actors invent them.
As they rehearse the scene again. They practice their timing.
Getting the pauses just so. They hold dozens of typed pages stapled together.
With notes in the margins and fluorescent pink highlights over each character's lines. Or this is how they really are.
These two participants. Their song is a duet they sing only to each other. A sacred exchange not meant for an audience or for me.
Antonio Lattonaio e anche Antonio Carpentiere.
From the anatomy notebooks of Leonardo da Vinci, circa 1504 to 1506.
And this old man, a few hours before his death, told me that he had passed 100 years and that he was conscious of no failure of body except feebleness. And thus, sitting upon a bed in the hospital of Santa Maria Nuova in Florence, without any untoward movement or sign, he passed from this life.
Enzo Barbiere e anche Enzo Tabaccaio.
And I made a dissection to see the cause of death, so sweet, which I found to proceed from debility through lack of blood and deficiency of the aorta, which nourishes the heart and other lower members. I found this artery very desiccated, shrunken, and withered. This dissection I describe very carefully and with great ease, owing to the absence of fat and humor, which rather hinder the recognition of the parts. The other dissection was that of a child of 2 years, in which I found everything to be the opposite of that of the old man.
Domenico Muratore e anche Domenico Ciabattino.
Leonardo cuts away the muscle and parts the ribs to expose the outer surface of the old man's left lung.
When he inhaled and felt the lung's expansion under his ribs, it was from there, in that lung, that the old man dreamed of himself as a boy, running across the Piazza San Lorenzo to the vegetable stall his father had. In his dream, it is raining, and the stones of the street exude the smell of cold fish and currants. His father waits behind the stall, scowling, and the boy reaches him. Though still a boy, he is as tall as the father. His fists clench automatically. He exhales, and the dream vanishes.
Leonardo fills his notebooks with drawings of the old man's carotid artery, his upper intestines, his stomach, his esophagus, his lungs, and his upper vertebrae. Having been conquered by death after 100 years, his dry and shrunken body is suddenly ripe for discovery and exploration by Leonardo.
Rodrigo de Triana, a sailor from Lepe, Spain, is a member of Columbus' crew on his first voyage to the New World. He clings to the rigging of the Pinta, and along the distant curve of the horizon, he thinks he sees a gray hump. Being an experienced seaman, he knows that these humps are often mistaken for land, when they are really just the advancing clouds of distant squalls. So he remains anxiously quiet, trying to make out the silhouettes of trees or mountains until he notices Juan Bermejo, a shipmate, squinting and cocking his head in the same direction as the gray hump that Rodrigo spotted. Rodrigo thinks fast. If he hesitates, Bermejo may be the first to cry out, and he may be right, and would become famous throughout the kingdom, awarded with 50 silver castellanos, and remembered in history books describing the great captain's discovery. Rodrigo decides to gamble. He cries out that he has spotted land. Juan Bermejo stares at him, says nothing, and spits into the green ocean.
Leonardo squints and peers into the old man's thoracic cavity. He probes the viscera, still wet and warm. Leonardo studies the complexities of the bones, vessels, and organs, the way ancient soothsayers studied the viscera of sacrificed animals, treating them as oracles capable of unlocking the secrets of the future.
The town is suffering a drought. There has been no rain for 3 months, and the air is full of hot dust. The knife slices the throat of the terrified lamb. Blood pours into a bronze bowl. For a minute or so, the lamb still bellows while bleeding. Then silence. The soothsayer, who is also the town cobbler, cuts open the lamb's belly with a single, straight incision. The spleen is grayish blue, and both kidneys are swollen. Translation? The lower intestines are empty, except for a thin, milky fluid. Translation?
A mulher da aldeia.
Cobietes miasta.
The women of the town must make a portion of the southern hill.
Peregrinação. Até as colinas do sul.
There are 3 hard stones in the gallbladder. Translation?
Antonio Latonaio e anche Antonio Carpentiere. Enzo Barbieri e anche Enzo Tabaccaio. Domenico Muratore e anche Domenico Ciabatino. Gli uomini del paese, come gli uomini in tutti questi paesi, hanno 2 o 3 lavori. Questa tradizione è una difesa contro la fragilità economica della vita compagnuola mediterranea. Nessuno desidera una cosa unica di cui concentrare, ma la stabilità stanno a desiderare. Anche conosciuto come
Chameleon
Factotum.
Domenico Muratore is at work.
Bag of grout. Bag to trough. Hand to hose. Water to trough. Hand to trowel. Trowel to trough.
The hand jabs the trowel into the trough, mixing the grout and water with a folding motion, a series of tight half circles and wrist flicks. The mixture attains a consistency somewhere between pudding and bread dough.
Hand to trowel. Trowel to grout.
The hand scoops the grout with the trowel and lightly throws the grout into the spaces between the tiles.
Grout to tiles. Trowel to tiles.
The trowel glides across the coarse surface of the terracotta, scraping off the excess wet grout. The sound it makes is a watery glissando of white noise.
Fingers to grout.
The fingers massage the wet grains into the grid of uniform gaps between tiles, making sure the grout seeps all the way down.
Diti a calcestruzzo.
Rodrigo, victorious, stares at his own scarred knuckles that bulge at the strain of hanging onto the ship's rigging. Staring at them, he imagines that his knuckles are mountains and his veins are veins of gold waiting for him and his fellow sailors in the fertile landscape of the new world that he has already begun to love. As they slowly approach the distant land, the gray gives way to the green, and getting closer, the details of trees, rocks, and sand become more and more apparent. Rodrigo can make out broadleaf plants with orange fruits that are completely foreign to him. The sand is a strange pinkish yellow that he has never seen. Then, as they get even closer, Rodrigo sees the naked body of a man who seems to look right at him, then covers his eyes and runs into the forest. Can we work here? Rodrigo asks himself. Can we build houses, canals, shipyards, churches, brothels, and banks in this strange, hot place?
Leonardo navigates the mysterious inner continents of the old man, searching for the gold of knowledge. Carefully, he draws the rings of cartilage that surround the old man's esophagus and the larynx and vocal cords.
From this semi-solid tube where the breath creates words, the old man's next dream arises. He is in a room with his son, the one with the limp. His son sits on the edge of a bed with black sheets, and the old man is standing in an open doorway. He hears a low whistling sound coming from his son. But that's impossible, because his son's mouth is wide open, exposing teeth and tongue in a grotesque imitation of a scream. And he could not possibly whistle in that position. And yet, the low whistling definitely comes from his mouth. The old man's eyes begin to itch, and he looks at his hand. The veins snake along his thin, wrinkled skin. He feels his own pulse in his throat and falls backwards into a dark chasm. He still hears the sun's low whistling. He is falling into the whistling or into his son's gaping mouth. He wakes up with his back pressed hard against his bed.
Columbus and his crew, triumphant, row ashore in small boats. Rodrigo, as the first to sight land, is given the honor of planting a cross in the sandy earth of the new world. With a single thrust, the sharpened point of the wooden cross penetrates the sand. A spurt of black mud oozes out and a crab runs away. The silent natives cover their eyes. Then they give the Spaniards a list of new words.
Cannibal. Canoe. Caribbean. Cuba. Hammock. Iguana. Jamaica. Manatee. Potato.
Cannibal. A man who eats other men. Canoe. An American Indian boat. Caribbean. A group of small islands. Cuba. A country. Hammock. A kind of net bed that is hung between two trees. Iguana. A lizard. Jamaica. A country. Manatee. An endangered water animal. Potato. A vegetable.
Rodrigo notices that also the natives do not know how to write. This list is in alphabetical order. He marvels at the coincidence. He has no idea what these words mean. He only knows that he is forbidden to touch the women, strike the men, or yell. He notices for the first time that it is raining. Closing his eyes, he also notices that the sound of the rain falling on the strange broad green leaves is completely different from the sound the rain makes on the roof of his father's house in Lepe. He stares at the rain. Columbus draws the contours of the undeveloped acquisitions of his masters, and, in right-reading script, he renames the islands capes and bays for animals, princes, and saints' days.
Every night they come and sit around in chairs, drinking, smoking, and playing cards, and laughing and talking that language that we don't understand, and never will with his high-pitched squeaks and throaty growls. Even when they sing their songs with the string-covered box and I try to change, prepare to deflect their glances with their rolls. Every night, the same way, get louder as the hours go by, and we crouch in a corner waiting for the next one to take us. Again and again, and now only minutes pass, between the smell of cigars and the grip of scarred hands. Then only the seconds and the light of day pierces the trees. They groan and spit on the earth and go away for the day. At night keeps returning, the days change from me, time to me. The silence but the nights always return, they're always the same. They come back with cigars and cards in the string-covered box. Every night they come and sit around in chairs, drinking, smoking, and playing cards, and laughing and talking that language that we don't understand, and never will with his high-pitched squeaks and throaty growls, even when they sing their songs. With the string-covered box and I try to change. And into the black that flies. But they do it every night the same way. Now is it. And we crouch in the corner waiting for the next one to take us in. Not only that, between us, the cigars, the papers, and the only second says it. Please.
Phone and spit on you.
Go for the day. Understand? Isn't there rain? It's always rain. The strings are by.
In the corner waiting.
Bears drinking, smoking, and
round. Bears.
Peace.
For the day.
Rain breezes. Onto the stream covered. And I try to change it.
The guys.
Hour after hour, night after night, Leonardo probes deeper and deeper into the old man's body, cutting. Wiping away the blood and bile, and preserving each dramatic moment of discovery in intimate detail. With the same sure eye and sure hand that painted elusive smiles and designed impenetrable walls, these meticulous drawings are like the maps of explorers, first-hand accounts of previously uncharted territories. With each cut of the knife, he penetrates deeper into the unknown. Leonardo uncovers two ligaments and a bundle of nerves that once enabled the old man to recite poetry or kiss his son's cheek. They are also exactly the same texture and color as those of the slaughtered goats hanging in the butcher shop on the corner. He cuts through these to expose the lateral surface of the old man's tongue.
From here, along the edge of his tongue, the last dream arises. He is sitting under a small green bridge, and it smells sweet and floral, very much unlike the bridges along the Arno, which all smell like dead fish and damp marble. A hand covers his eyes, and he can only hear one thing, a soft buzz in his left ear. Then he feels another hand slide across his face, and two fingers touch his lips. The sweet smell gets stronger. The two fingers lightly drum a repeating pattern on his lips, and the pattern causes his lips to vibrate in their own related but disconnected pattern. The soft buzz in his ear continues, and now his vibrating lips start to produce their own buzz, an octave lower than the one in his ear. For a long time, this strange duet continues, his low buzzing and his companion's drumming and higher buzzing. Then he hears one word, Erbe, in his son's voice, and he wakes up.
Next to his detailed drawings, Leonardo writes accompanying notes in mirror image script, preserving his knowledge and ensuring the secrecy.
During their long walk in the hot sun to the Western River, the three men, Antonio, Enzo, and Domenico, talk about the endless circle of their lives and their families' lives. Domenico says he has heard of a place across the ocean where men like them can make great fortunes, then send for their families and work in peace without fear. He thinks of his son, who is at that age where disappointment is turning into resentment. When he tells him which herbs can cure which ailments, his son doesn't even smile. Domenico tells his friends that the rich people in that place across the ocean want masons and carpenters to build their homes, churches, and banks. They can get on a ship, pack their tools,
years later, Domenico is living in a four-room apartment. His son Paul lives in another four-room apartment. His wife is dead. Paul has never married. Domenico, the father, is 60. He and his son both live in the same gray city. A river divides the city into two unequal halves. Crates, timber, and concrete blocks line the banks of the river, a snaking monochromatic line of unused and deteriorating building materials broken here and there by docks and patches of thick weeds. Goldenrod ground into powder for headaches and nausea. Sandbur made into a poultice with lemons for arthritis. Pampas grass boiled into a tea for indigestion. They stare at each other across the blue granite courtyard that separates their apartment buildings. Domenico and Paul, the father and the son, gazing out of the fourth-story windows that don't open. Because they live so close to each other and within each other's view, the son and the father have never talked to each other on the telephone. If one needs to speak to the other, he stands in the window and stares across the courtyard at the other's window. Eventually, the other looks out the window and sees the first, staring. They both know that if one puts on a cap or jacket while they are staring at each other, this is a sign for them to meet downstairs in the treeless courtyard that forms a neutral zone between their buildings. This method was never discussed, but came into existence of its own volition.
Sometimes.
And has worked flawlessly for 7 or 8 years.
They never make it downstairs. Instead, they get sidetracked through a maze of corridors and doorways. They get hopelessly lost in buildings so familiar to them that they know each shadow as it changes from season to season. All this is seen from above. a vegetable. An endangered water animal. A country. A lizard. A kind of net bed that is hung between two trees. A country. A group of small islands. An American Indian boat. A man who eats other men.